Is this thing on? Hello, hello. What is up, you guys? You are listening to Grow with Ro. I am your host, Ramana. And on this show, we have discussions that help you feel better, think better, do better, and get you from where you are to where you want to be. So let's get into it. What is up, you guys? Hello, happy Wednesday. Welcome back. Today, I am sitting down with the lovely Miss Lissa, who was a client of mine for 6 weeks. It was the 6 weeks that she was in St. Pete for a nursing program that she was doing. Get her fitness, nutritional, health journey started and hire a personal trainer during that time. So it was really fun. I would go to her hotel half the time and train her there. And then she would come meet me at the gym that I work at as well the other half the time. So, but story to share that I think you will get a lot of value from. So I wanted to have her on and have that conversation. So let's get into it. Hello, Miss Lissa. Thanks for hopping on today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here.
How's it feel to be back home? We haven't really caught up since you've been back.
I'm slowly trying to find my life and get myself sorted since being back. One of the things I was really like concerned about was coming back home and kind of like throwing away all the hard work I put in there. Rightfully so, because now I would have to be back to managing my household and my child again. And although I've had setbacks, at least like the mentality of keep showing up has still kind of been present. So it's been like nice to be back home, but I miss St. Pete.
Oh, I know. You were like, you fell in love with it out here unexpectedly.
I did. Strongly considering moving back.
Oh my gosh, you should. I definitely fully support that. but let's get into this because I think you have a super powerful story to share and I'm looking forward to the nuggets of wisdom that I'm sure you'll drop in here just based off of how introspective I know you are. So take me back. Yeah, take me back to who you were before you had your daughter, Lily. I know that when we talked leading up to this, you had mentioned there was drinking, partying, and just sort of some destructive patterns. What did all of that look like?
So I definitely felt very alienated from most of my family, especially my parents. So like I didn't have a good relationship with them. And it was always like I just felt a lot of anger and resentment towards my parents especially. And so like I left home at 17, didn't even have a place to go when I left home, to be quite frank. But I was like, I need to leave here or like this is going to end really badly between my mom and I, who I lived with at the time. And I just kind of was like, I would say very like, I mean, I had a tattoo at 16 in the house, like very rebellious, you know, go out with my friends, get like, you know, literally white boy wasted, but like throwing up bile the next day, you know, literally like there's just like just that bad. I worked a ton and poured myself into school just because I knew that school would help me get out of poverty. Like education was important, but like that was about it. I worked and I was in school. And when I was off, I partied way too hard. And was like, didn't have healthy relationships, was either always in a relationship with someone that was abusive or disrespectful. Just lived on the edge, did all the wild, crazy things you can do because like, why not? And I think one of the biggest things I did that was destructive was I used to pour so much energy and time into people trying to fix them, right? So I was trying to be like the Olivia Pope of everybody's life, but like my own internal life was just a mess and I was always falling apart. So it was like all those things I was doing was just had me spiraling all the time. This cycle of like, why am I like this? What am I doing? Why am I with these people or around these people? Why doesn't anyone love me? And then seeking all those things in the wrong people, places, things. So yeah, your girl was a mess.
Dude, yeah, I can completely relate to that. For me, through high school and college, I definitely did my fair share of partying and the self-destruction and doing the wrong things, hanging with the wrong people. And then that same cycle of just like, no one loves me and seeking companionship and validation every which way I turned. So I definitely get it. Do you think it was your relationship with your parents that was the biggest contributing factor to that downward spiral for you?
I think so. Like, my dad was not really present in my life. Funny enough, the first time I saw him again since I was a child. So I saw him when I was like up until I was two. Him and my mom split. He had ended up getting deported back to Jamaica. He came, saw me there when I was five, had like a little birthday thing for me, and then I saw him again when I was nine. So from nine to about like 26 or 27 was like I had not seen my dad. So it was 18 years basically at the time that I went to see him the last time. So basically absent father, right? And then my mom, like bless her heart, she did the best she could as a single parent with two children and very little family support, but we almost never saw her. And when we did see her, she was angry and abusive. So it was just like, I have an absentee parent. So now I'm forced to parent my younger sibling. And then she remarried, and the man she remarried was awful. He was god awful. And then he just kind of caused a further wedge slash rift in our family. So it was like I never really felt like I had a loving, supportive environment in my home. And for that reason, I always had to go outside of my home to feel safe and comfortable. So, a lot of those behaviors I had was either like rebellious because I was just like, you don't listen to me as a parent. I don't feel valued here, even though as a child, I'm adding a lot of value to your life. I don't feel heard. I don't feel respected. And then so when I did get the opportunity to be free and crazy,
You took
that's
it.
exactly what I did. But I always felt emotionally empty.
Yeah, I get that. So you had mentioned that you were in an abusive relationship. This is with your daughter's father. How long were you guys together before you had Lily?
He and I dated for a few years on and off. So it started when I was in college. Actually, at the time I started my nursing, so I was a junior, and we dated on and off for that time. And by up until the time we had my daughter, I would say it would have been about 3 years that we were dating on and off again.
And what kept pulling you back into that relationship? Was he abusive the whole time, or did that not start till the end?
When it started off, it was just kind of like, I wouldn't say it was abusive the entire time, but I feel like it didn't get super abusive until he was super invested. Right, because up until the time where we were dating, it was like we would date, we would be like, you know what, this isn't working, let's go our separate ways. And that's like a nice way of putting how we said it, but it was like, forget you too, okay, whatever, bye. And then it was like breakup to makeup cycle, right? But I wouldn't say he was abusive. He would say mean things here and there, but it was like I would say mean things here and there too. But then by the time we were actually together and consistently together, that's when the little subtle things of abuse started happening. The words, the hitting started, the disrespect started, the cheating and the lying was like out of control. I think the problem was is that by the time I realized it was abuse, I was already so far along in my pregnancy and so invested in this relationship that it was like, okay, at this point, do I love him through whatever he's going through, even though I'm the one that's really like, being mistreated, or do I let this go? So we were together for at least, say, 3 years. And then after having my child, we were together for another like year and a half before I was like, all right, I'm done. That's it.
And then that next phase where you said that he was more invested, and that's when things shifted. Was that a result of the pregnancy? Was the pregnancy unplanned, or was it intentional?
We had known we wanted to start a family together, but I don't think we were going to start a family together that soon. It just kind of like happened that way. So it was like it was something we knew we wanted, but probably not like at that point in time. But I think he was invested. He became more invested like right before we had our daughter. So that was to him when this relationship actually became serious to a different extent.
Okay, that makes sense. So, were there substances involved in all this? Did you notice a link between maybe drinking and the abuse or anything like that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah,
Okay.
he definitely like drank. He didn't drink often, but when he did drink, it was like sloppy drunk, right? And then so it was just like, okay, but then like, I grew up with everyone smoking, so I never really looked at smoking, weed as like drug abuse until like, you start mixing it with other things. So then it's like, let me pop whatever Oxy now and again. So it was like just like If you name the drug, he's like, let me try it. That's short of like cocaine and heroin. Like, let's try it. Why not? So he definitely would do like drugs and stuff like that here and there. And it was never something I was ever into. And then I'm also a healthcare professional. So I was just like, it's not for me. I'll go out and I'll have a drink. But, you know.
Yeah, so did you have sit down conversations with him, you know, around the abuse, around the drinking, where you were like, hey, here's what I want, here's what I need, here are my standards, here are my expectations, my boundaries, this is not okay. Did those conversations happen, or were you not really in a place yet? 'Cause this is such a long time ago, you were younger. Were you not in a place yet where you had that language and just that self-awareness to be able to assert your needs and your expectations and your standards?
I think we had many conversations where I sat him down and I was like, look, this is not okay. What can I do to help you? You know, because this is I shouldn't be treated like this. But I think it's the cycle of abuse where it's like something happens, he apologizes, you're in a honeymoon phase, something sets him off, and then you guys are just repeating this cycle. So we had many talks and conversations, and this is what I need, and you can't do this anymore, especially now that I'm like having your child, but it never made a difference because he was just who he was, and this was who he was. I mean, I never told any of my friends or family about the abuse until basically I left the relationship. But his family and his siblings, his two sisters, were aware, because I told them, like, you know, this is what he's doing. What can we now, as a family, do to help him? Because if I tell my family or friends, they're not going to want anything to do with him, and they're not going to have any investment in trying to like help me help him. Their only concern is going to be about me and the child I'm, you know, growing. But even when his sisters did get involved, it was not helpful. Like, there was just no getting through to him because he could not see what he was doing was so wrong. It was as if I deserved it.
Okay, so even when the conversations were happening, if anything, he was just like placating, right? And it was never really any true ownership or taking responsibility, looking at himself like, okay, you know what? Maybe I do have a problem. Maybe I have something to look at. Like maybe I need some therapy. Nothing like that.
Correct. I feel like if the ownership did happen, it was like, no, we need to go to therapy, not I need to go to therapy. Right. And so I was more so like, maybe you should focus on going to therapy first. And when it's time to bring me in, then you can bring me in.
Okay, because he saw it as like, yes, there was something to own in terms of his reaction, but
Correct.
you need therapy also because your behavior was the thing that was upsetting him and causing him to respond the way he did.
Right. Not I need therapy because I'm an abusive person and I have issues to work through.
So, do you remember the exact moment that it was like the straw that broke the camel's back? You had decided, like, no, this is it. I'm done. No more. Good night. Have a good day. I am out.
We were arguing one night and I can't even, the funny thing is that I don't remember what we were arguing about. But we were arguing one night, and this is when we had my daughter. Now she's here, she's alive, she's present. And like, she is by me, like standing by my feet, and he is across from me, and we're arguing. And I'm looking down at my daughter and seeing how it's affecting her. And then I legit remember like looking at him, and I thought in my head, either you're gonna kill me, and you're gonna go to prison, and our daughter is going to be parentless. Or I am going to hurt you in some form of self-defense, and I could injure you, and you could end up dying, and I'm going to go to jail, and my daughter is still not going to have a parent. And this was probably when she was like a little bit less than one. She was not yet one, and I was like, this is not going to work. Like, I need to start planning my exit strategy. And so in my head, I thought, okay, listen, you have to play chess, not checkers. Like, you have to make slow, deliberate decisions to get yourself out of this because, at the end of the day, the only person that is going to really lose something here is your child. Like, she is the one that's going to lose the most and has the most to lose from this. So you need to like get out.
So then, how did you start planning that exit strategy? You mentioned that you were around for what, another year after that? Or how old was Lily at this point?
She was almost a year at this point, you know, just starting to like get ready to walk. Holding on to things. And he left that following, say, like August, so a little bit over like say 6, 7 months, and I started to like for one look for other places to live. I kind of like started to like aggressively pay down debt and like just save up a ton of cash. Talking to my family about like childcare help. I applied for my daughter's passport and I kind of like, had to talk to some of my family in Jamaica and I was like, look, I'm struggling for childcare. I had some aunts that were like, look, if you send her here, we can help her, help you out by taking care of her. So it was just kind of like getting all those things in place. And I made a promise to myself and to God, like, Lord, you see me through this. Like, if this man leaves again, the next time he leaves this door, I am not letting him back in. And I wanted it very much to be deliberate like that. I didn't want it to be like me throwing him out, because every time I throw him out and he comes back, it's like, okay, you can come back in. Versus, no, you chose to leave. This was your decision. I am not going to dispute this decision. But goodbye, and I wish you well. And here are all your packs. So, let me pack your things up for you, sir. They're right here. You can come get them when you're ready if you're not taking them with you. So it was like I said to myself, if he's leaving again, perfect, like perfect exit. Because at this point, you can't say I threw you out. You can't say I broke this family. You did a long time ago, but goodbye.
Good
Like
day.
it's your goodbye, and I'm just supporting that.
So then he left, and you and Lily just stayed in that same house together alone. Weren't you like afraid? I don't know. That sounds scary.
Yeah, I did. He had a key, but I mean, he never like made a copy, which was like, thank God for that. But when he left the key. Either no, it wasn't that he didn't leave the key. He had lost the key.
As men do.
So I had like either had to change the locks or whatever. Yes, as men do. So he had like lost the key sometime before. So we were like sharing a key, which happened to work out because then I had my key and he didn't have one. And I did have to stay in that apartment because I had a lease for 2 years, and like it was almost impossible to break a lease with that leasing company. So I just had to ride the lease term out. But at the time, it was a 2-bedroom apartment. I had a spare bedroom, so my brother had moved in and took in that other room, and then Lily and I had the other room. And so it was me, my brother, and my daughter living together. And then, it was kind of scary that, like, oh, he'd come back. But in my mind's eye, I'm like, is he going to come back if he left? Like, I wasn't considering him coming back. But when he did come back, he came back and basically, like, assaulted me at, like, literally in front of my apartment one day because, like, I wouldn't talk to him. And I'm like, sir, you left. The relationship is over. Like, no, if I don't want to talk to you, I don't want to talk to you. But like, it was one of those things where it's like I was stuck in a legal situation with my lease where I couldn't move. So I did have to deal with him after, and he did definitely show up and like tried to harm me, and I had to get the police involved and they had to remove him. But after that, he never came back there again.
And so you haven't seen him since. Has Lily seen him since?
She has seen him since. I think she saw him again, like, I want to say, like, that following year, like, when she turned 2, I brought her back from Jamaica. And, he was, like, very apologetic and, like, wanting to have a relationship with her. And I was like, all right, let me try this again. But, like, you're living your life. I'm living my life. We're not together. This is your child's birthday here. Like, you can help celebrate it. So, we planned a birthday party for her. He really did go above and beyond to make sure her second birthday was special. After he saw her for her birthday, he would see her once every few months, but not that often. And then later on in the year, he would see her more often, like once every couple weeks. But then I took a travel contract, say, when she was like 2 and a half, not even 3 yet. And I had asked him, like, hey, can you drive with me to Texas and help me get set up, just taking care of Lily, really, and my sister, helping out my sister, just getting settled and sorted while my friend and I start this travel contract. We're not together. This is just to, really like set your child up. I said, I'll fly you back and everything. And, we were there, we were fine. And then we get to Texas and he's like going off, acting crazy, like once more, like just same old patterns of behavior, and then assaulted me again in Texas in front of my daughter this time. Like It was always like she was around when I was getting hurt, but now this time she's physically present trying to say, no, don't hurt my mom.
And she's how old at this point?
And she's 2 going on 3 now, right? So she's old enough to understand and be aware of like danger and what's happening. To the point where the police came, they arrested him. Like they were like, we don't play that in the state of Texas. And that was like the last time she had seen him that December.
Okay. Can I ask, so what are you referring to exactly when you say assault?
So the first time he assaulted me, and I like would say assault, like it was like meeting me out my apartment, not, trying to hear what I have to say, like hand to the neck, like almost like trying to choke somebody situation.
Got it.
Like bad. Like that was bad. And then like in Texas, it was like punches, like throwing punches. He even like it was like so sad because he like there was like a bedside lamp and he even took that lamp and like hit me with the lamp, like and broke the lamp. Like it was like that with like Lily present. It was like extreme violence and aggression. And all I'm thinking is, what did I do to you for you to be this violent and aggressive to me? Yeah. So it was bad. It was bad.
Damn. Yeah. Well, first off, thank you so much for sharing that story. I'm sure that that's not the most pleasant memory to recall. So I really do appreciate your transparency and vulnerability with that. But damn, like I just chuckled because I was like, that escalated so fast. It went from like he was outside my apartment, not trying to hear what I had to say, and then he was choking me out. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? This shit actually happens?
No, it was bad. It was like it was like a switch with him, right? You never knew it was going to set him off. We would be laying in bed. I'll never forget. Like, we would be laying in bed talking, and then like he would get upset about something and like turn over and just like smack me. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? Like,
What?
what happened?
I'm sorry. What?
Yes. Thank you.
Dude, that is just wild because so it wasn't any sort of like there was no playfulness. It wasn't, it
No.
literally the intention was violence.
Yeah. Like we would be in bed talking about something, or like he would have my phone and like I don't know. Like I was a very open person, and I still am a very open person, especially in your relationship. And he would like go back 4 years ago, like before we started talking, and like your messages save, and he would be like, "Who is this person?" And I'm like, "We were just having like a good
Guilty.
day, a good time. Like what? What?" And then like it would be like, I can't use my words. Let me like hit you because I'm angry and upset.
That makes sense. It's super interesting because now that you are like way more introspective and self-aware and have been on this personal development journey, not to justify it at all, but can you see his behavior through a different lens now? You know, whether it be understanding childhood stuff or trauma or anything like that, just do you have a different, I guess, for lack of a better word, like different level of compassion for it? Again, not justifying it, but just from an understanding standpoint, to where, like you said, maybe back then you were like, what did I do to deserve this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's become so much. So I remember, okay, so this is actually like great that you brought this up, right? There's a point in time where I didn't understand why are you like this, right? And now it's like one through like going through training, right? I learned that for one, he actually has some sort of personality disorder. It's not all you're angry, you're violent, you're aggressive, you have traumas and things you're going through. There's also like a mental health disorder that he has.
Which one?
Like he has that. And I think it's a borderline personality disorder, right? And if you've ever heard of it or you know anyone like that, they're very narcissistic, self-absorbed, like they can't see past themselves in many ways, and they just have certain aggressive tendencies like the ones he exhibits. So I think his actions are not just a result of like hurts, pains, and traumas he's been through. It's also like a mental health disorder that he has yet to have treated or hasn't had treated since he was a child.
And is that characterized by such a drastic shift of mood or temper, I guess, going so from one extreme of hot to one extreme of cold? So, like you said, it's not just, you can tell it's just like trauma or, you know, you're triggered or you had a bad day and you're upset. And like I've been there, right? Guilty. But you're saying that this is different because of the drastic extremes of one emotion to the other at the flip of a switch.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think everyone, I've had an emotional snap before, right? But like, when the snap is over, and like most women do, right? There comes a point, like every woman has a breaking point. Every person does. Women tend to tolerate more, but we have a breaking point. And when we get there, we're like done. And it's insane. But it's different, I think, when you're looking at it as this is a situation versus like, this is this person all the time. Like, he was incredibly emotionally labile, like super unstable, couldn't really form meaningful relationship attachments, super self-absorbed. His behaviors and like attitudes, it just like, it was like textbook of this personality disorder. But again, he did have some sort of mental health issue when he was younger and was medicated for it. But as an adult, like, did a lot of like self-medication, right? Taking drugs, but like never actually had like mental health disorder treatment for it. And so like, once I learned that, it was like, okay, you can have empathy for a person because like, this is who they are. Yes. But this is also what they're going through because of a sickness that they have. So there was that. And then there was just also the fact that I realized that I had a lot of things that I did to contribute and make the situation worse. Right. I grew up in an abusive household. My mom, and I'm not trying to like talk bad about my mom because like I have a much better relationship with now. I love her dearly. But like I tell her now to date, like, you do not know how to use your words. She used to say the wildest shit to us growing up. Like things that I can't even repeat some of them because I'm like,
no,
how do you, you know, like, what? I'm your child. How do you say this? Uh-huh. You know? And then like, she
went like, are you okay?
Now I ask her like, are you good? You all right? That was a little much, you know? You can't do that when you're a teenager. You're
like, are you having big feelings?
I'm like, you are like a toddler, like express yourself, you know? But she used to say the wildest shit. So emotionally, she was very abusive. And then like physically, she would like, it was literally abuse. Like, she would say it's discipline, but the woman was so angry and pressed. Like, we do something that children do. And the extreme of the punishment that we got, it was just abuse. It was like, this is not a thing. It shouldn't be a thing. It shouldn't be allowed. So I like missed that, like, this is abuse in my relationship because I thought this was love. This is what love had looked like to me growing up. The my mom throwing her husband out and bringing him back in. The my mom talking to me absolutely crazy and, you know, but saying she loves me, or hitting me like a mother should never hit their child, or any parent should ever hit their child, but, oh, you love me. And then, you know, from my dad's end, it was my dad was me make big promises and grand gestures, and then I wouldn't hear from him for long periods of time. And then also being emotionally unavailable. So it was like I had a culmination of my parents in this person, and I didn't recognize that, okay, maybe I shouldn't be in this situation, because that's what the two primary relationships in my life showed me as love. Mm. And now I had it all in one person. So, and then I realized like I was reckless out the mouth. So there was times where I could have probably diffused the situation, or, you know, kind of like brought down the energy, but I was like, no, let me actually read you for filth, because you know what, you actually deserve it. And I'm sure that that didn't help an already like emotionally intense environment. So I definitely feel like I learned and had so much more empathy for him as the years kind of went by.
Well, it's super interesting because a lot of the work that I think that people at this age are doing right now is this introspection piece where they're questioning how they are contributing to a problem or a dynamic or a situation, right? I think there's like two schools. There's the people who are doing that work, and then there's the people who are so quick to be like, he was the red flag, he was the toxic behavior, he was the narcissist, right? This like self-righteousness. Right. And this is even something that I have faced within my own relationship and within my own self, is like, I would look to Ryan as, you know what, if he just didn't do XYZ, then I wouldn't have responded that way, right? Or if he just went and did this thing, then I would be able to respond in a different way. It's like this, like I said, self-righteousness, right? But it's like, at the end of the day, you are in control of your reactions. There's something to investigate within yourself. It's an opportunity for, if you're spiritual, it's an opportunity for spiritual development, for personal growth, to see, hey, if something is upsetting me about something a person is doing, why? And before you go and blame them and ask them to change every single thing about them so that you can finally be at peace, you can finally be happy, right? Which we don't even know. This person can go do every single thing that you've asked them to do, which would mean that they're you, they're not them. But they can go and do all of that and you can still get upset about something. You can still feel off about something.
Right.
You know, and you can still react emotionally to things and there still would, no matter what, be something to investigate.
Yeah, you touched on that a lot. Yeah, I can understand that. And I think like we don't see ourselves sometimes the way we need to see ourselves so that we can grow from it. It's like looking in the mirror, right? But then after you, it's literally like biblical, right? It's like the man who looks in the mirror and after looking in the mirror forgets what he looks like. But it's like you have to be able to like assess that I have these patterns of behaviors and this is how I contribute to any of the negative situations in my life and what can I do better from it to grow.
Do you remember what led you down this journey of starting to look at yourself? Like, was it a book you read or your faith or what?
I think it was a culmination of things. I remember like, so I actually like got saved while I was with her father, which is another reason why I felt like, you know, that was just one of the contributing like things or factors or events in my life that made me like, okay, yeah, this is definitely a faith journey now. But I remember Joyce Meyer, it was like The Confident Woman. I'll never forget reading this book because this book is old. It's probably about 20 years old, you know? And so you're reading this book and you're like, man, this book is a little bit prehistoric for the time that I'm reading it. But she was just talking about being a confident woman and a confident mom and like who you are, like who God created you to be. And I think one of the things that I talked about a little bit ago was just like looking for love in all the wrong places. And so through that book, I had come to realize like, no, like God loves me. One, two, he created me to be this beautiful feminine being, you know? And like, yes, we're going to go through things, but like he can give you beauty for the ashes that you have. And so like, it was like reading books like The Confident Woman or The Confident Mom by Joyce Meyer. And then listening to Michael Todd, who is like a minister at this church in like Tulsa, Oklahoma, but he streamed a lot of his stuff and I watched a lot of it. And he would touch on some like heavy stuff, like heavy, heavy, like, you know, like funny enough, he and I are both born in November. So we're the same sign. So as a man hearing him talk about these things and I'm a woman, like, you know, his patterns and tendencies. And I'm like, oh my God, like you're speaking to me, sir. But it was just also realizing that I was thriving in masculine energy, right? Because my mom had to be this masculine woman. That was my example of what a woman is and does growing up. And so I fed off that energy and became that. And so having a man preach about certain things he's experienced in life and or like forgiveness and, you know, the relationships and or like things, how we treat ourselves, right? Like how are like, we don't hold ourselves accountable. And I just felt convicted a lot, like, oh my God, like, yeah, this is me. I need to work on these things. And I think with listening to hard truths and hearing what other people were going through, it became so much easier to like, look at the telescope at myself and be like, okay, what are your issues? What are your problems? What are you doing to contribute to whatever's going on in your life? And how can you work on them and fix them and do better? Not for you only, but also for your child and like what you want to model for her. And then I have a younger sister who was kind of like my honorary firstborn that I also felt I need to demonstrate like these taking ownership, doing better. I can't just say don't be in an abusive relationship. I need to live that out and walk that out for her to follow it as well. And that was something I felt I didn't have growing up. And so I was like, I can't be a hypocrite and just say, do as I say. I needed to like walk this thing out, even though it'd be hard and challenging. Mm-hmm.
And how did you start working on the femininity side of things since you didn't really have anyone to model that for you? This was a realization that I actually talked about, I think, on last week's episode. I, within the last two years that I've been really deep diving into this personal development stuff, right? I've done a lot of reading and listening to men. I just resonate with men better. You know, the whole like direct, straight to the point, no bullshit. It's very practical and pragmatic and tangible. And I found that listening or reading female speakers or female authors, it's a lot of like, look in the mirror and say you're beautiful. And that just doesn't, it just doesn't work with me. But what I came to realize is that all of the discipline and kind of the rigidity that they're teaching, that these men were teaching, is they're actually speaking to other men. They're trying to cultivate more leaders, more masculinity, right? In men who just sort of sit back and, oh, you know, victim mentality. And so now I've had to really work lately on this whole other side where I'm realizing, oh my gosh, I really haven't looked up to any women as an example of how to be a woman. And so now I'm having to kind of not relearn, but tone that back a little bit, the masculinity, the discipline back a little bit, and learn actually how to embody more of what comes actually really natural to me. So anyway, tangent, but yeah, how did you learn how to be a woman?
So it's really funny because it's like, I didn't have a lot of feminine examples in my life. It was very much like you. And I think that's how you and I kind of relate as well as we do, because it is a no bullshit conversation. And I fucking love it. I thrive on it. And so there's a part of me that's always going to be that way. And I guess that's the masculine side of me. But in terms of feminine, it wasn't books like that helped me to be more feminine, because Joyce Meyer, although she's a woman and talks about being confident, she also has the no BS approach because she went through so much abuse. Right. So in some ways, she's a masculine, feminine woman, you know, but I would say sometimes the masculinity would even trump the femininity whenever I see her in person, when I listen to her. But I think it was just the fact that, like, growing up, I've always had this soft side of me. I've always been very maternal. There has been a very nurturing. So being a woman always came natural to me. But it's just the fact that I've had to be tough and hard because of circumstance. Right. So I had always like made sure like my hair looked nice. I always did my nails. I always loved fashion. I loved to dance. Like I always had this feminine person, this like being in me as a woman, but never got the opportunity to let her thrive. So I think just actually being no bullshit with myself and not coddling myself and disciplining myself, but also learning to love myself is how I got to thrive in that femininity. Because then I realized like who you are is enough. Who you are, how God created you to be, is enough. And it's okay if you're a little bit masculine sometimes, because, you know, whatever, it is what it is. But just always like remember like who God called you to be, you know, as a woman. And it wasn't ever a book that could teach me that. It was embracing who I was. And also, you know, all the qualities I already innately had, just now being able to flourish into that feminine being.
Yeah. So it's not so much of having to step on the gas, but to let go of the brake.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
So letting go of kind of all the things that are in the way of you being able to fully express your femininity, which is that self-protection mechanism. So in any past relationships that you've had other than this abusive one, as well as I believe you're dating someone now who you met in St. Pete, he shall not be named. But do you find yourself still kind of falling towards the masculine self-protection tendencies, or are you able to definitely let go of that control a lot more and trust more?
Let me see. So last relationship compared to new one, let me see. I think my last relationship set a good precedence for me to thrive in my femininity. Like really and truly, because to some extent, he kind of was like, baby, I got it. And I was like, oh, thank you, Jesus. Like, this is long overdue. Like, it was like, oh, this is wonderful, you know? And I think that's probably why I fell so hard, fell so fast, because it was just like, this was the first time I really and truly felt like I was allowed to be a woman, right? But when things started falling apart, I could definitely see myself falling to that masculine energy, right? Because it was like he's a great man, and I always say this, and I never, want him to ever feel like I didn't mean what I say, or like how, I gave myself to that relationship. But like, he was very avoidant, right? And so like, when you're and I'm a very direct person. So there would be problems or times where we're having issues, and I felt like I had to be the man of the relationship and be like, yo, let's like solve this problem. Like, what's the problem? And I absolutely hated how like I used to have to like force a conversation sometimes. It would be like, look, this is what you're doing. This is not okay. Can we talk about it? And he would be so avoidant. It was like it would take forever to actually have a conversation, and I would almost have to force it out of him. And I absolutely hated that, because it was like, how are we supposed to build anything meaningful if this is how you are? Or I would have to like push him to have these conversations. And so like the relationship ended up falling apart and not working. And hindsight is 2020, but I remember saying to you and having a conversation with you about the fact that like, I don't want to have to force things out of a person I'm with, especially if I'm as open as I am, for better or for worse, right? And I realize how an avoidant person, or a person that can't express themselves appropriately, I felt, made me more masculine, because it made me feel like I needed to be surviving as opposed to living and thriving.
It's like, press pause. Are we taking notes, people? That was so well said. Yeah, like the thing is, anxious and avoidant attachment people tend to pair up with each other, which can be the greatest growth opportunity, because they both have to work on what causes them the most discomfort, right? It is intimacy for one, and it is abandonment for the other. And those literally are like perfect puzzle pieces together. But, or it can lead to like the most destruction and pain, because they're not able to actually give the other person what they need, right? And yeah, and so people are faced with this question of, okay, am I going to look at this stuff within myself and work on my intimacy issues? And then the other person, am I going to look at my abandonment issues and, work on my own emotional dependence, so I'm not completely overwhelming this person with my needs? Yeah, so but a lot of people choose not to do that work, and being with an avoidant person can be tricky, because especially being an anxious person where you just want to know, like tell me, reassure me, like what are you thinking? How are you feeling? Hello. And not working on this kind of communication will mean that you will never truly have a intimate and prosperous close relationship, right? Because you'll be with this person and literally not know what they're thinking or feeling. And they may not want to reveal it, or they may not even really know within themselves what it is that they're thinking or feeling.
You even saying what you just said, like you literally hit it on the head, because it was a point in our relationship where we were going through something. And I was like, what are you thinking? Like, I always felt like, and I remember saying this to him, I never know what's going on in your mind. I never know. It actually is hurtful when you think about it. Like, you're with someone, you're doing life with someone, your children are now met and meshed together, you're having a family dynamic, but like, what is happening in your life? And I have no awareness. And to make it worse, you don't know what's going on in my life, because now I'm a little bit more guarded. So now it's like, should I share? Should I not share? But I want to know what's going on with you, and then fast forward now to my current relationship, which I guess I am in a relationship again, but whatever.
She said it, y'all.
Like, whatever. I am a little bit like, damn it, only because I was like, I don't want to love anybody again, which is what all of us do when we've gone through pain. But he's like so good about listening, and like, I don't ever have to not say what's on my mind. Like, we've had conversations about an ex, and it's not to shit on the ex, it's just to be like, sir, I am not ready to be in a relationship. I just left the last one. I'm a hot fucking mess. These are all the things going wrong in my life. Do you still want me? And it's like, I wouldn't even want me right now. So why would you? But he is like, no, like I'm here for you. I care about you. It's who you are as a person that I care for. And at the end of the day, like, this is who I am as a
You're like,
man.
damn
If I
it.
cannot make your life better, then I shouldn't be a part of it. And then to make it a step further, it's like, look, if this man saw that you were an amazing woman and still fumbled you, that's his business. I am not going to fumble you because I'm here and I'm present and I'm here for it. So I had a whole fucking meltdown this morning, right? And he was like, she just sat there and was like, how can I help? And I was like, well, you're not being here is not really like helpful. Because like if I had somebody to carry my groceries up the stairs and walk the dog, I'm sure my morning would have been smoother, right? But him not taking it personally and being like, you know what, it's okay. And like calling later and being like, you good? Because I know you wasn't good this morning, but are you good now? And I'm like, oh, okay, this is nice. This is very nice.
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, gosh, it probably just feels so good to be in that state of harmony where, 'cause I know what that's like where you're like the other person has just got you know, like they're holding you and they're holding space for whatever emotion you bring their way, and it does bring such a huge sense of that trust that naturally you just kind of let go and there you are in all your glory.
Yes. It's easy. It's easy. It's easy to let go and flourish when you feel like you're safe. And I think that is how true femininity thrives in the way it's supposed to. Because you know that you're safe, you're secure. So now that secure, stable sense of, okay, I can be myself. I don't have to worry about certain things. You're like, oh yeah, I'm flourishing. I'm thriving. Even if you have a bad day, you can still always come back to this state of, oh no, this is how I'm supposed to be. This is, and not supposed to be by society standards, by, but internal harmony standards.
I feel like women, as they're coming to learn this, they'll be more emotional and they'll be more explosive. And sometimes I think it's as a way to like test the man to see if he can handle their emotions. And I've even noticed with Ryan that the more I get responses from him that are like validating or that are like, hey, you're good. How can I help? Talk me through it. I just let go and I don't feel the need to even escalate emotionally as much, right? I know obviously that this is also in part because I'm actually really working hard to learn the steps to not be as explosive as easily as quickly, but at the same time, that explosive potential is still within me, right? And so he has the opportunity, he knows exactly how to push that button. And when he doesn't take it and instead is there in this like supportive form, it is definitely much easier for me to not go into that emotional place of needing to test this man on whether or not he can actually be there for me, if he can take care of me and he can hold space for me. So I want to go back a little bit. We had talked about all of the stress that you had experienced during your pregnancy in our initial conversation before we started recording. And you had said that you were kind of surprised that Lily came out really healthy given the amount of stress that you endured. So I just kind of want to go into that a little bit. Was that at the forefront of your mind during the pregnancy? Had you known the risks and the impact of stress on a fetus? Like, I just thought that that was a super important interesting point to touch on just randomly in the conversation, and so I would love your perspective on that.
And when I say like perfectly healthy, I like didn't think I would maintain the pregnancy. Like the abuse was bad. Like it was horrible. Like I would go to work and you know the abuse always starts in places you can cover it, right? So like my legs would be bruised up because he would like intentionally hit me in places that like people wouldn't see. But by the end of the pregnancy, I had like black eyes and like busted vessels in my eye that like I had to either use makeup to cover up or like make stories up to my like coworkers about, which is so it's just horrible. So like in terms of her being like alive and healthy, like I meant the abuse was so bad and then I was super stressed out the entire time, right? My mom had just moved to Georgia like like it was like right before I got pregnant, she moved to Georgia. And I had told her to leave my younger sister because like all of our family was here, but she didn't want to leave my younger sister. So like now I had my mom pretty much like divide up our family to go be with a man that didn't give a shit about her or her family, you know? So that was like hard. And then, like, I was living in Long Island, New York, because I had started my nursing career there, and I decided to move home to the city. So now, like, any friends I made in Long Island, which were where most of my friends were, I pretty much lost those friendships moving into the city. So now I was pregnant with very little friends around me. I think I had like one or two friends around me the entire time I was pregnant, and I barely saw them, right? So I now have no family support, no friendship support, and then I don't really have anyone to talk to about the abuse that I'm suffering. So I went through training as a nurse, and you learn about, you everyone has a, mother baby class, everyone does. But you learn what you learn, you take a test, you brain dump that information. If you're not using it practically, you're not thinking about, oh, the fact that, stress can bear such impact on a pregnancy. But like I was just, it was just horrible. Like, and I think the other thing that I didn't realize was how depressed I would be, not just because of life circumstance, but all the hormones and all the body changes and everything that I'm going through, and I'm going through it all alone. And not knowing, like, is this supposed to happen versus this is not supposed to happen, and then to just see her be born and be completely healthy and, have nothing wrong with her. I was just like, wow, like, thank God, because this could have gone so differently. Because, flash forward years after having her, I decided to become a labor and delivery nurse. And I had people that I like babies I would deliver that were full term, and they would die in utero, right? And the moms and dads did everything right. They didn't do anything wrong, and their baby is dead, born dead, right? Like stillbirth. And I had all these stressors, factors, abuse, the depression, and had a perfectly healthy baby. And so to me, I'm like, that's a miracle. A complete, just there's no words for that.
Yeah, wow. So then once you had Lily, you mentioned that that was kind of the turning point for everything, right? That was the turning point for getting your life in order. It was the turning point for rebuilding ties with your family, for giving her the life that you never had, essentially. So how did you even know what to do to be a good mom? Like, how did you learn what to do and what you wanted to give if you didn't really have an example of what to do or how to give it?
Woof. I mean, I don't think it just happened by having her and becoming a good mom. I think the first step was that, like, okay, so quick little prelude to this. The day that I went into labor, her father and her share a birthday that is a day apart. His birthday is the 26th of February. Her birthday is the 27th of February, which is today. So,
Ah, happy birthday, Lily.
happy birthday, Lily, right? So I remember, like, I took him out for his birthday, went into labor that night, and was telling him, hey, go have fun with your friends, before I knew I was in labor. And once I was in labor, I was letting him know, like, hey, I'm in labor, but we gotta go. And he came in again, super angry, super drunk, super abusive. And like, it was to the point where it was like, oh, if you're not in labor when we get to the hospital, it's gonna be problems. Like, that was kind of like how I went in to give birth to our daughter. So we go into the hospital. Sure enough, I'm in labor and I have her, right? And he would talk so much shit during the pregnancy. He would be like, oh, that child's not mine. And I was like, okay, let's do a DNA test, and then he'd be like, no, you just want to do that to prove something. I'm like, yeah, to prove she's your child, so you can shut the fuck up, right? So now I have this baby in the hospital room, and he is a very fair man, right? He is like Puerto Rican and some form of Russian or something like that. So he's very fair skinned man, light eyes. And so we have this baby, and I'm like, if I did not see this baby come out of me, I could not pick her out in the nursery. Because here I am, a black woman, and I have a little chunky, clear baby with blue eyes, like heart of the ocean gem blue eyes. I was like, that ain't my child. That is
Clear.
not mine. I'm telling you. And so it was like, okay, like, now we have a child. Now he can't say
My
anything
gosh.
because it's like, oh my God, this is the no DNA test needed, right? This is my child. And I remember all of those emotions I was feeling, right? Like, of having this child, the events leading up to having her. Then we're in the hospital room. I'm seeing women still texting his phone. And I was just like, look, I will give you every opportunity to be a father, because I never had my father present. But moving forward, we can't be together. And he like flipped his shit. But I was more so like, Like he flipped out, like was making threats. I'm like, sir, we're in a hospital. This is the perfect place for you to act the fuck up so I can call the nurses in here and they can get you out of here. But it was like an aha moment for me. Like, no, I'm a mom now. Like, this is no longer about me. Like, this is about the person that is dependent on me. I had always taken on other people's responsibilities, but I'm like, no, this is my responsibility. And she is helpless without me at this point in her life. So if nothing else, I'll give you the opportunity to be a father, but like, I have to like tighten up and I cannot be like my mom. Like I think the hardest part about becoming a mom was I was terrified to be as shitty as my mom was. I mean, she was a great provider, always made sure we were fed and like clothed and always had a roof over our heads. But like in terms of being mothering and nurturing and there, she was never there. And I like didn't want that for my child. And so I was just like, how can I make sure that I am everything to my child that my mom was not to me? And how do I make sure that she's in a safe, loving, nurturing environment, despite all the other things that would threaten that? Right. So it was like having her kind of propelled me into, okay, how do I do right by her? But I mean, it took a lot of unlearning bad patterns of behavior to be like, I think, an even decent mom to her now.
Yeah, so essentially it was like with the flip of a switch, you realized, holy crap, I have someone else to be responsible for now. And so I have to stand up for myself because it's not just for the sake of myself, but for the sake of this kid.
Right.
I have a lot of friends that are currently going through this experience. Actually, I have a very good friend whose husband is kind of in and out, back and forth between dealing with addiction and depression, but he is a very good husband and a very good man, very honest and has a lot of integrity. But over the course of their relationship, it's been this battle of whether or not he feels he has something to live for, right? Because it's not like he has a career he's really passionate about or a business he's building or really any sort of like masculine gender societal norms that he falls into. And so there just wasn't a ton of hope or passion. And then they just had a baby, what, like 8 months ago, maybe? And he's like a completely new person. And it seems that it just has really healed him because it's given him something to live for and it's given him hope because he now gets to be the father that he never had, you know, and I just think that it is so incredible how much, because she even tells me how much a child will trigger unhealed things within you that you didn't even know were there. Because all of a sudden, you know, like they're taking all the attention, they're taking all the time, they're creating a little bit of a divide in your relationship in those early stages of after being born because they need all the attention and all the time, you know, and it just brings up a whole new set of things to work through. But it also can be, from what I hear, one of the greatest healing and empowering experiences. So it's just really, really cool to hear about. And I am really excited to see this even play out in my own life because I will say, I am very passionate about my routine and my disciplines and my regimen and all of these things and how much of an adjustment it's going to be to have a tiny little human to have to devote all of my waking attention and sleeping attention to all the time. And actually, I have friends who are considering not even having children just because of the sacrifice that it is, you know, and I can imagine it must be really tough, but I'd hope to see it from a place of like, okay, I just have to play like a game of Tetris and figure out how to make all of these puzzle pieces fit so that I get my way, but I also am there for this baby the way that he or she needs, instead of seeing it from this position of lack of like all of the things I'm having to give up in order to have a kid. Right? Like, oh, I no longer get to sleep like I want. I no longer get to go to the gym when I want, or, you know, randomly go on vacation or randomly go have brunch with friends. And all of it now requires a lot of forethought and a lot of coordination. And yeah, you can't, there's no spontaneity allowed anymore, you know? So that can be a really tough adjustment. after 30, 35 years of not really having to think about those things the same way. Where did you stand on that? Were you kind of ready to make these sacrifices and ready for this new stage of life? Or did you have a harder time adjusting and felt like you know, was there that feeling of like, dang it, I don't want to have to compromise this much or give up these things, and any sort of like tough adjustment period?
I've had that experience. Trust me. It's hard because it's like, it's a balance. It's a balance, right? And so I'm like glad that you touched on it. Yes, having Lily was the, and this is what I say to people all the time, having Lily was the greatest blessing I could ever ask for. Being a parent is the greatest blessing, but it is also your biggest challenge at life. I truly, truly feel that. It's your greatest blessing, but it's going to be one of your biggest challenges. Because to be a healthy, whole individual, you have to nourish your being. How do you do that when you have someone or something that is always pulling or needing you, right? And so it is a balance, trying to find that balance and cultivate that balance in your life. And recognizing that, yes, you're a mom, yes, you're a dad, but you're still a person. Before all of that, before your roles, you are a human being with needs. And you still need to make sure that your needs are taken care of. So best believe, like, them 6 weeks I had in St. Pete, like, as hard as it was a fucking vacation. Because coming home, I'm like, I have not stopped. I missed my kid dearly. And I'm so grateful to be back home. And I'm glad that we got to spend a week together recently. And it's her birthday, and I could make sure she had a good birthday. But, like, you still have needs that you have to, like, take care of. And it's hard sometimes to not look at it from a place of lack, but I think the job I'm in gives me perspective, because you see people have babies all the time and those babies are not well, right? So just getting pregnant and having a well child makes you like, thank God. And you can always like look at it from a place of gratitude from that perspective, but it doesn't mean that like you always have to like thrive in sacrificing and being this parent. And it's like the greatest thing of all, because sometimes being a parent is very thankless. And when you do everything for your child to make sure that they don't have a shitty life, then they become entitled. So then it's finding the balance between giving them what they need and what they want and making sure they still understand work ethic and gratitude, right? So I definitely teeter between the two, but I think it's like, gratitude keeps me grounded, right? And reminding myself that she's a blessing, she's here, she's healthy, and she does add joy and light to my life. And it is my why. It is my reason to keep living, keep going, even when I don't feel like it. But it's also like, mama's a person. And here, grandma, here's Lily. Bye. I'll see y'all in 2 weeks or a week if I need it. Bye. And I love you. And I'm not calling a check on you because I know you're with grandma and you're good. FaceTime me if you miss me, but I know I left you in good hands, right? And then so I can come back and be the best version of myself for this child, for this person, and show her what showing up for yourself looks like.
And so this is your mom that helps out with Lily, right?
Yes. Yes.
So then how did you and your mom get to that point of being able to rebuild your relationship to where she now helps out with Lily so much and so often? I know I've had experiences with having to rebuild a relationship with family, and it can be really, really tough. So can you elaborate a little bit on the process of mending that relationship, as well as kind of on the impact that that has had on you and on Lily?
Yeah. So there was a point in time where my friend pointed out to me that most people, when they have a problem, go to their mom or their dad first in their life. She was like, your parents are the last person you go to for anything in your life. And I was just like, well, alrighty then. My mom also said something to me along the lines of, if something happened to you, I'd be the last person to know. Because that's how we didn't speak. She would call me here and there. I'd answer if I want to. Other times I'm like, I don't want to be bothered. I didn't feel like my mom was a mom. I didn't feel like she was present. And I felt like even when I became an adult, it was more so what I can do for her than what she could do for me. And even when I got pregnant with Lily, she wasn't there at the baby shower. She wasn't there when she was born. Yeah, I think she had come up when Lily was like a few months old for like a christening that I didn't even end up doing. And she watched her for a night and left like first thing in the morning. So like I had to overcome a lot of those like, you know, things, not just from childhood, but even adulthood. And it was just learning to forgive, just like forgiving her and letting go. And I think going through an abusive relationship gave me so much perspective on like what she's going through or what she went through, because she too was in an abusive relationship with my father. And instead of using that as an educational moment, it was more so to condemn my brother and I for my father's actions, right? But having gone through an abusive relationship, I now had empathy, respect, and compassion for her that I could not have had before experiencing that. And then now being a single mom to a child, even though I had a degree and I made good money and I was still struggling, I was like, how the fuck did she do it with two kids on no money and no family? Like, what? Like, so now I could understand why she was angry, why she would say the things that she would say. So it made it so much easier to forgive her and empathize with her and be like, man, I can't imagine what it was that you were going through. And granted, you could have handled it a lot differently and done a lot better, but at the end of the day, I can understand where you were coming from. And so it just made it that much easier to forgive her. And I had to take into consideration the fact that, like, Lily's father, he doesn't have any living parents, right? So my mom is Lily's only grandma. And so I would be remiss to not facilitate a relationship between Lily and her grandmother or Lily and her grandfather if she doesn't have any living grandparents except mine, and they're alive and able-bodied and able to form a meaningful relationship with her, because they can teach her things I can't. And maybe they'll have a bond with her that like I never had with my grandparents. And so I almost felt like if I even I'm upset and I have right to feel the way I feel about my parents for their actions or inactions, like I also need to mend that relationship so that my daughter can have a good relationship with them. So it was like a culmination of factors, but I think I could understand what my parents were going through, having experienced some of it, and just be able to empathize with people. It just makes it so much easier to forgive them, because it's like, forgive them, because did they really know what they were doing?
Yeah, it's crazy because as we get older, we find ourselves acting like our parents when we were growing up a little bit more, right? Whether it be with body language, whether it be with you always hear like, I don't want to grow up to be like my father in this way or have this personality trait or have this, level of patience or whatever it might be that our parents had that maybe we think that they should have behaved different or that we knew different. But I haven't seen my birth mom actually in like 20 years. And even now, like I'll recognize that there's moments I'll like laugh like her or sit like her and I'll catch a glimpse and I'll be like, holy crap, like I remind myself of someone whom I haven't even seen in 20 years, right? And it's just sort of programmed in our DNA. It's wild. But it's important to remember that most people have the best intentions. So if I look at where I am now, essentially just scraping the surface of understanding myself, right? That's required me to be extremely intentional with that work. It's been strategic. It's strategic what books I'm reading, what I'm re like what I'm consuming, on podcasts and who I'm talking to, what friends I'm around, the opportunities I say yes to, like seeking out the info to heal and override and rewire these old patterns has been an intentional thing. She wasn't really doing any of that. She was very young, 10 years younger than I am now, in a new country by herself, focusing on her career as a supermodel that she wanted to be, right? And she had this young daughter with her. Like it, when I think about the context, it makes perfect sense to me why she would respond in certain situations the way she did, why she would lose her patience the way she did, why she kind of like had a mental breakdown the way she did. We could even look at like Britney Spears at this point when she had her quote unquote mental breakdown and like buzzed all her hair off. Like, given the life she had to live with zero privacy and paparazzi following her around and all this, like, it makes perfect sense why she would go and buzz her hair off. And now, I just like have so much more understanding and compassion for it. So people are typically doing their best given the cards that they're dealt, right? And given the state of their consciousness that they have at that point. And so now, as we get older and we find ourselves living some of those same circumstances that our parents went through when we were little, right? Like you might be experiencing now as a mom that you can be like, okay, well, now I understand why my mom made XYZ decision or responded in XYZ way. It just helps reaffirm. We look at it from the outside thinking we know how they should have handled something, right? There's judgment and we can label it now as, oh, good parenting, bad parenting, this or that. But the thing is, like, if they knew better, they would probably do better. So as we grow up, let's just give some grace and learn to forgive. All right, last question. I want to leave off with, what is an area of your life where you are currently experiencing growing pains? So something that you know you need to work on, that you are actively working on, and what steps are you taking to improve in this area?
It's funny because how I even met you is on my health and fitness journey, right? And so it was me starting on it. And now that I'm back home, it's me trying to maintain the progress that I made. And so that's one of my growing pains area. It's being back home in my own environment with all the demands on me in my home and still trying to show up for myself in terms of my fitness journey, right? I didn't come to you with like body goals, like I want to look like this. It was more so I'm weak, I'm lazy, I don't want to do it, but I'm going to have to do it, right? And so the biggest thing was showing up and making that commitment to myself. And I still have growing pains because like, since coming back here, what, barely been in the gym, barely been working out, but it's like, I've learned that I thrive the best when my environment is set up for my success. So I'm like, okay, what are things I can do to set myself up for success to maintain this? So it was finding a gym that was 5 minutes down the road. It was going to scope out that gym to see if it's something I'm actually going to like, if it created the same environment as the gym that I would work out with you in, you know? And like what the people there were like. It was making sure that I have the building blocks and elements in terms of food, you know, food, nourishing my body, making sure I'm increasing my protein intake. So it's like one of the biggest growing areas for me is making sure that I'm fit and like healthy and showing up for it even when I don't want to. And it's hard because unfortunately being healthy is expensive, right? And then the other thing is it takes time. But I felt like I owed it to myself to like still show up in that area. And so for me, it's like, yeah, you've had some road bumps and some speed bumps along the way since being home, but like making sure that the commitment I made to myself to be healthy and fit in this year that I'm maintaining it no matter what. So yeah.
I think it's just about remembering that going to the gym serves more purpose than just that extrinsic motivation of like wanting to look a certain way, right? Because it still is an opportunity for you to have some time to yourself, to fill your cup, to quiet the mind and really just have like a one-track focus to working out, you know, focusing on form, focusing on your breathing, focusing on actually lifting the heavy weight. And it allows the mind to quiet for all the other noise, you know, the responsibilities of life, so that then when you leave the gym, you can return to life, to motherhood, from a new perspective, from a fresh perspective.
I always appreciate you. But I think just we as women don't do a good job sometimes of showing up for ourselves. And so it's just reminding myself that you deserve this. Like you give, if it was for Lily, you would give her that hour. If it was for your sister, your mom, you would give them that hour. If it's for the person you're with, you'd give them that hour. You owe yourself that hour, you know? And so just having that in mind, it makes it that much easier to just commit to it and stick to it. It's just the growing pains.
Those are the growing pains. All right. Well, Lissa, thank you so, so much for coming on and having this conversation. I really do appreciate the level of transparency and just the details that you offered, right? Because a lot of people will shy away from that. But what I try to bring with the conversations I have on this show is that rawness, is that authenticity, because that is where people get the most value. That is how we learn from one another. That is, it's that relatability factor, right? And I know that it must have not been the easiest conversation for you to have, but I don't doubt that many people found value here. So I'm truly, truly thankful to you for that.
No, you're welcome. And I just hope that, like, as you said, people found value from it. Like, I definitely prayed this morning, like, God, help me to say the things that, like, people actually need to hear, because I found that one of the biggest propellers for my own growth was people being willing to be vulnerable about where they are and where they're coming from. So I definitely hope, you know, someone on here got value from this.
Oh, I don't doubt it one bit. You guys, if you got some value, please share this with someone who you feel could benefit from it as well. Post it to your stories, tag me so I can repost. I will also drop Liz's Instagram in the bio of the episode. So go ahead and give her a follow or give her some words of encouragement for being super open on this. It wasn't easy. And that is it for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next week. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.